You're listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska, K201DA in King Cove, Alaska.
In every artist's career, there are a few songs that stand out. On World Cafe's Backtracking, we ask artists to look back at their discography, pick some of those tracks, and tell us the stories behind them. Today, that artist is Keith Urban. He'll talk about the song that started a musical journey for him, the song he wrote in just one sitting, and about this song, his breakout hit, Somebody Like You, the song that changed everything for him.
The story came pretty quick because I was struggling with liking myself, loving myself. I felt like other people could, and I wasn't able to, and I wished I could love me the way that they did.
And he'll talk about an instrument he plays in that song, the banjo.
It's how a guitar player cheats and plays a banjo with six strings that's tuned like a guitar.
Plus, he gets into his new album, High. It's Keith Urban in a new Backtracking today. I'm Rena Duras, and this is World Cafe. And in case you didn't know, Keith Urban is from Australia. So for the rest of this hour, you'll be hearing other musicians from Down Under, like this band. They're from Sydney. They are called Midnight Oil. And this is from their album, Blue Sky Mining. It's called Stars of Warburton.
Follow me for the ring of the
Hey, I'm Raina Duris. This is World Cafe with an all-new backtracking where we give an artist a list of prompts like the song that changed my life or the song that came to me in a dream, things like that. They match those prompts up to tracks across their entire catalog, and we talk about them. And today on Backtracking, it's Keith Urban. Keith, welcome to the World Cafe.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
It's so nice to have you, and it's so nice to be here. You've welcomed me into your Nashville studio.
Thank you.
Which is amazing. People who can't see it, who are just listening on the radio, big wood and green room full of instruments everywhere.
Yeah.
Could you tell us a little bit about what's going on?
It's a little more packed than normal because we're in the middle of band rehearsal for a bunch of dates coming up. So this room, which is normally completely empty, ready to have players come in to record, is now full of my road band.
Are you excited to get out on the road?
I am. Because we've got so many new songs as well, so a lot of new players in this new band, and yeah, it's good. It's exciting.
Well, the first song that we're going to talk about today is a new song, and the prompt that you've chosen for the first song is the song you wrote in just one sitting. What is it?
Yeah, that doesn't happen a lot.
You know?
I wish it did more often, but it's a song called Straight Line, and it's on my new album called High. I chose it because it was a song that came out of a bit of frustration I had with the previous record I'd made that I ended up scrapping after spending, 9 months on it.
Why did you scrap a record that you'd just spent 9 months on?
Because I recorded all the songs sort of one at a time. For some reason, we were touring at the time, and for whatever reason, I wasn't thinking about what these songs all sounded like together.
Okay.
And I realized I was lacking a lot of energy. There's a lot of songs that are a bit too earnest and a bit too, well-crafted, blah, blah, blah. But they were sort of lacking of just a joyous burst of sunshine spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed that side of my music. It's a big part of my music, and it really wasn't very present. So it wasn't coincidental that one of the first songs I wrote after that was Straight Line, which started with a drum loop that Greg Wells had, sort of it was just a really simple kind of loop, and Jerry Flowers, who plays bass in my band for many, many years, grabbed this little 12, this little I don't even know what this thing is. Little guitar with too many strings. And while the loop was playing, Jerry just started playing. Oh, sorry about tuning. And he just kept playing that over and again. And then kind of that melody is like, still I need it, still I'm and it just started to burst forward as a melodic, structured, joyous thing. It didn't have a lyric or anything, and it sounded like phonetically straight line something or other was what was sort of trying to come out of the mouth, sort of like making vowel movements is how the song started being written. And once we sort of realized that the song was about getting out from under a dark cloud and sort of getting your life back, for me it was written because I'd just come out of this record-making process that didn't have enough of that liberated joy and fun.
Yeah.
And of course we made it about a lot of people that have sort of monotonous Monday to Friday lives that have to get up way too early for the alarm clock, and they got to show up for work, and and it's the same thing day after day after day. And you sometimes need a song to have a mini vacation.
Yeah.
3 minutes of a vacay to just get out of that world for a second and disappear into another better place. So that's how the song got written so quickly.
Yeah. I mean, you sing, I don't want to just go through the motions.
Yeah.
And you've been making music a long time. You might not have a 9-to-5, like get up with your alarm, kind of like go into an office kind of job, but when you're doing something for a long time, even if it's something you love, it can start to maybe feel like routine. How do you keep things fresh for yourself in music?
By just listening to the voice that keeps pulling me forward. shakes me up. I mean, it's the same voice that's there if I'm playing a show and I momentarily go into any kind of autopilot, which is really rare for me. But if that happens, there's sort of a little voice goes, "Hey, what are you doing? What are you doing? You did that last night. You did that. You know what? Come on. You know." And if I'm at a gig and it's like something's not quite connecting, and I sit there and go, and I get all, you know, I can go either negative with like, "Ugh, what's wrong with this?" You know, but then the voice man goes, "Well, fix it. Do something. It's your gig. Fix it." You know, someone said one time, if you go to a party and there's no vibe, it's because you didn't bring one.
Oh, I like that.
So it's kind of taking that philosophy into a live situation.
Yeah. Straight Line is kind of like, the way I saw it is it's kind of like the thesis statement for a lot of the new album, kind of, for High.
Yeah.
And the title of the album, High, that word can mean a lot of different things. It could have a lot of different interpretations.
Yeah.
What does it mean for you? What does that mean in your mind?
Just a euphoric place, you know, the sort of the ultimate destination. I mean, we all agree on that.
Sure.
How we all get there is different. But we all agree we're trying to get to that place where we're above. It's the high road or whatever you want to call it. We're above all the crap, and it's a much better place to be.
Well, let's go there. Let's listen to Straight Line from Keith Urban, the song that he wrote in just one sitting on World Cafe. On World Cafe, I'm Raina Duras. This is a feature called Backtracking, where we give an artist a list of prompts, and they match those prompts up to songs from their discography. My guest today is Keith Urban. He just chose the song Straight Line from his new album, High, the song that he wrote in just one sitting. Next up, Keith, you've chosen the prompt, the song that changed everything. What is that song?
For me, even though it wasn't my first number one, it was... I chose Somebody Like You because I was trying for a long time to distill a certain combination of sound and melody and lyric all into the right song and the right recording. And Somebody Like You for me was the first one that everything lined up. And I remember the day vividly of not only writing the song with John Shanks. I remember that feeling of this is kind of, you know, I write a lot from energy and riff and melody. These are usually the consistent places that everything sparks from. And I'd never met John Shanks before and went out to LA to write with him and took a six-string banjo with me, which I used to write a lot on. I walked into his studio and he had a little gallop rhythm thing happening on a drum machine, not too dissimilar to other songs I write where there's a rhythmic thing happening and the rhythm speaks to me. And I pulled out my ganjo, and this came out. And I just kept playing that over and over again, and we just felt like, oh, okay, that's something. Something's happening in there, and that sort of and all the melody came quite quickly, and then the story came pretty quick because I was not in a great place in my life at the time, relationship-wise, and struggling a little bit, and was struggling with liking myself, loving myself. I felt like other people could, and I wasn't able to, and I wished I could love me the way that they did. So I Want to Love Somebody Like You was sort of almost an inverted song about myself in a weird way, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Of course, the song ends up coming across sounding like it's about somebody else.
Yeah, I know that when you first played it for your girlfriend, she had a reaction.
She was not happy. I was such an idiot. I was just in a bad way. I should never have played that for her. I don't know what I was expecting.
That song ended up being a hugely successful song. Some artists I've talked to, they'll say, oh, we knew we had something really special on our hands when we did that. Did you have a feeling when you wrote that? Did you know it was going to...
I did, in so much as when it was finished, and a lot of it got written that day, and then that night I went back to the hotel, took the little work tape that we'd made, and fleshed out more lyric in my hotel room. With a lot of liquid assistance, and came back the next day and we sort of finished it all out. So It was sort of a couple of days and it was done. Demoed the song, I brought it back to Nashville, and I remember listening to it on the plane coming back thinking, this has the thing I've been trying to get. You know, I've been listening to so many other songs from people, and this actually has all the stuff that I'm trying to get. So now I've got to figure out how to make a good record out of it. I was really excited about the song. I came and played it for somebody at my record company who's no longer there. Played it for them. And while the song was playing in his office, another artist walked in, and they started chatting in the middle of me playing this song. I was so offended that I just got up and turned it off. And then the record company goes, hey, what are you doing? And I go, doesn't matter. And I was so offended that I just walked out. Went, I'm not even going to bother whether you like this, don't like this, because it doesn't matter to me right now. I'm going to go away and make the best record I can with it. And I played it for Dan Huff, and he loved it. And it's the first song we got to record together.
Well, you showed them. you'd been in Nashville for, I think, about a decade when you put out Somebody Like You. How had spending that time here in Nashville shape the music that you were making at that point?
That's a good question. I think it was a lot of it was to do with players, finding the right players. I'd played with a lot of different session players, what I would call court-appointed producers, who were kind of like, okay, try this one. Okay, try this one. Okay, try this one. And it was just like nothing was working. And finally getting to get the right players, the right engineer, and then the right songs. Everything just sort of came together after lots and lots of failed attempts. One of the things that Dan and I struggled with from the beginning was I found Dan too slick and he found me too raw. And we were, I think, to a large degree. That's what we brought together. And in hindsight, that's why it worked really well. I think without him, my stuff would have been too messy and not commercial enough. And I think without me, it would have been too commercial, not had the teeth and the sort of the dirt. Mm-hmm. That it needed, the dirt under the fingernails, the sort of like, that attitude. So those two worlds coming together, I think, is what made those records for me.
I think it was Billboard called it like the top country song of the 2000s decade when they were looking back on it. And I think that is interesting because you are from Australia and people think of country as this very American creation, this very American thing. Did you get any pushback from the country scene when you first came here?
Well, country is an American thing. I mean, certainly I grew up with American country artists as my major influence. So my dream was always to be in Nashville.
Yeah.
You know, and it wasn't... When I came here, I never saw myself as an Australian artist. I saw myself as an artist who happens to be from Australia. So it's a very different thing. And I was just grateful to be here among all my heroes and songwriting heroes and musician heroes and artist heroes, just everybody that I was so influenced by. So it was stranger for everybody else than it was for me.
The prompt is the song that changed everything for me. So before we hear it, tell us how your life was different after this song came out.
That song, like I said, I had a number one before that on the album before that called But for the Grace of God, and it was my first number one, and several other songs on that record that were top 10 sort of thing, top 20, you know. But that one was like the winning horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
The others did really well, but that one was the winning horse. And it gave me a clarity, which then I think my audience, it helped me find my audience. My audience went, oh, what, that, we like that. And I went, great. We found each other. Then the other songs I started to make were part of that tapestry.
Let's hear it. It's Keith Urban, Somebody Like You, on World Cafe. Keith Urban, Somebody Like You, the song he says changed everything. Coming up on Backtracking, Keith will talk about the song that started a sonic journey for him and about how part of that journey relates to his love of a musical genre that might surprise you. That's in a minute on World Cafe. Welcome back to the World Cafe. I'm Raina Duris, and this is Backtracking, where we give an artist a list of prompts. They choose a couple of those prompts, match them up to songs from their discography, and tell us the stories behind them. Today, Keith Urban is my guest. The next one is the song that started a sonic journey for you. And the title of the song is kind of appropriate for a journey. What is it?
Yeah, it's Somewhere in My Car. Yeah. I wrote this song with a guy called JT Harding. He's a great songwriter. I'd never written with him before, but I had an idea for a melodic structure. The reason why I chose this is because it was on an album called Fuse, which came out in 2013. It's the first... I had vocal surgery probably a year and a half before this record. I'd made a whole bunch of albums with Dan Huff, and my vocal cords were getting damaged, and from a previous way of living life that was not good for my vocal cords eventually caught up with me, and I needed really serious vocal cord surgery. Had that, when I came out of the surgery, this kind of, like this crazy big range sort of opened up in my chords, and I could experiment with writing songs and working with people in a way that I hadn't been able to before because my confidence was going down. As my chords were inconsistent in their performance, so was my confidence. And so I just sort of, you know, I could feel my records getting a bit smaller and a bit smaller. And the vocal surgery opened up this feeling of experimentation.
That must have been really exciting.
It was scary and exciting all at the same time. But it opened up a lot of desire to work with new people. So I was working with different players and trying to put different sounds together. I love Achtung Baby by U2. Mm-hmm. You know, I love U2 and obviously love Joshua Tree and all those records. But Achtung Baby was such a great record because it was a 180 of everything they'd ever done. And I remember reading something where Bono said, you know, it was intended to be the sound of chopping down the Joshua Tree. And I love everything about that road that they took and the calling that they answered. And I felt in a similar place where I needed to dismantle the Somebody Like You's and these sorts of things and bring machinery more to the front, bring quantized synthy stuff to the front, put my banjo in there, electrics, just fuse a lot of stuff together.
Well, there's a great guitar solo in this song that sounds like it could have come out of like an 80s metal record.
Thank you.
No, that's a compliment. It's a compliment. And I know that you are, you're a metal fan. You were in a metal band at one time called Fractured Mirror. and that you got into Iron Maiden when you were really young.
Yeah, I didn't sneak in, but I went when I was 15.
Yeah.
And a buddy of mine, I told my mom I was staying at his house. He told the same. And luckily they didn't check in on us. And we slept out overnight out the front of this hall to be first in line to get up the front for an Iron Maiden
concert. Did it blow your mind?
It was unbelievable.
They're the best.
Especially at 15. It's like, that's what that band's built for.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm curious what it is, and maybe when you were a kid and still now, what it is about metal that appealed to you?
Energy.
Yeah.
It's energy. It's that testosterone energy. It's just everything's happening. You know, your hormones are raging at 15 and that music finds you and it's just like fantastic. But I'd also discovered Ricky Skaggs at the exact same time.
Yeah.
And that kind of, that chicken pickany stuff that, you know, that Ray Flack and Albert Lee and some of these guys were doing. I was so fascinated by that. So that was speaking to me and Iron Maiden speaking to me all at the same time. So I had a bit of a musical identity crisis.
Well, that was why you got fired, I think, from your Fractured Mirror.
We were doing some like Saxon or Judas Priest song or something and they throw me a solo and through this big Marshall stack with my Strat, I literally bust out a fully overdriven chicken picking solo.
But that's interesting because, you know, what I'm hearing you say from about Somewhere in My Car is you're trying to bring all that stuff kind of together.
Yeah, I think a lot of it lives together in my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, like it all makes sense to me. And so I guess I always want to find a way to express how that all works together.
Yeah.
Or certainly how I hear it working together, what the common threads of all those things are. So, Somewhere in My Car came about from trying to blend all of those elements together.
Here's Somewhere in My Car. It's Keith Urban on World Cafe.
I'm driving home tonight, catching all red lights. That's all right, cause I don't want to be alone. There's nobody waiting there, cold and empty bed. Words I wish I'd said, come on the radio. I know you're
in my heart. I should take down all those pictures from my wall. Promises we made won't fill this empty space. Ooh. And I don't know why I just can't let you go.
You just heard Keith Urban, Somewhere in My Car, the song that he says started a sonic journey for him. I'm Raina Duras. It's World Cafe. Keith Urban is my guest today on Backtracking, where we give an artist a list of prompts, and they match those prompts to songs in their discography. We talk about them. Before we go any further, earlier you played a bit of the ganjo for us. And for people who thought you said banjo.
Right.
What is a ganjo? Could you explain it for us?
Yeah, it's how a guitar player cheats and plays a banjo with six strings that's tuned like a guitar, you know. So it's just tuned like a guitar. You know, it's got all the same tuning, six strings instead of five. You know, proper banjo has four strings and then a fifth one up here. I never learned how to play a banjo. And when I was making a record a long time back, early, I was with a band called The Ranch, and we were making a record, and there was a song I wanted banjo on, and we had a banjo player come in, and he's playing on the track, and I'm like, no, because I can hear the part in my head, and he kept trying to pass me the banjo. I was like, I don't know what that is, you know. And I would sing the idea that I had, and he would play it, but the picking thing wasn't what I was feeling, and I was so frustrated. And I left the studio that day here in Nashville at the Castle we were recording, and I went to a place called Corner Music. No particular reason, I just went there to look around. It was near where I lived. And I walked in and I see this thing. It's not this one, but it's just like this on a stand. And I saw the six tuning pegs at the top, and I'm like, no way, no way. And I pick it up and strum it and went, oh, this is it. This is what I need. And, because I can hear these parts in my head, but I can't play them on a traditional banjo. So I rented it actually because I couldn't afford it. Took it back to the studio and played it on this track the next day. And it was like the missing piece, the sort of sonic missing piece. And then the whole thing came together. The whole picture was finished. And then I put it on another song, and then it ended up on over half the album. And then it's been on most of my songs ever since.
You touched on something there that I find so fascinating, and it's trying to describe to other people the sound or the energy or the melody or the sound, like the song that you're trying to get to in your head.
Mm.
That is something I find really interesting. Like, how do you think about that? If you have an energy, say on the most recent album, On High, how do you explain that to the people that you're working with?
Any way imaginable. I mean, sometimes it's singing the line, and then they'll play it, and then I can sort of say, oh, if it's a bass player, you're like, well, try the pick, try fingers, try rolling, try doing up and down, try doing just downstrokes, and you just keep playing, just playing with all of the palettes and colors until it comes together. But I think that the balancing act is always in, it's not necessarily the best way. So sometimes, you know, you work with a really good musician, and I go, and I tell them how to do it, and they do some attempt at it, and I'm like, oh, that's actually much better. Do you do that?
Yeah.
Well, I can't believe we're already at the last prompt.
Oh,
here
crazy.
We are. It's the last one. It's a new one, and it answers the prompt, the song that surprised me. What song is it?
Yeah, I chose this song called Break the Chain. Wrote it with a guy called Mark Siblia here in Nashville. Again, someone I'd never met, but a great publisher called Troy Tomlinson called me and said, you should meet this guy. I think the two of you would be interesting together. So I had a day off from touring, went to his house, walked in. He had a little studio in the backyard of his house, and I went in. And I wish I had the guitar that he had, but it was a... this is a nylon string, but it's an old acoustic, and it had like this bridge. This is the bridge, and right here, instead of it being nylon or bone or anything, it was rubber.
Oh.
And I'd never seen a rubber bridge on a guitar before, and flat wound strings that didn't have any life to them. They're very dead sounding. The whole thing was, I knew it was sound dead, and I picked it up. And when I picked it up, when I picked it up, I went, I said, "Oh, it's a lovely guitar." And while I'm doing this, he's got a microphone, and he's like, he's putting the mic up here, and he's plugged it in, he's hit record, and we've literally said nothing to each other. I've said, "Hi, what's that?" and picked the guitar up. It's one of those wonderful moments when the song is ready to be written. And as I'm doing that part, in my head I hear this other part. So I hit, we record that, and I said, record this bit, and I went. There's nothing to it. But when the two sections came together, they formed this chordal structure that wasn't a specific chord. It was sort of a hinting at various chords. And then this melody came, and then I started writing words quite quickly, which, again, I don't typically do that fast, and had my yellow legal pad, and I just wrote. And this song was coming about... And I was raised in an alcoholic house. My dad was alcoholic. And that has its own challenges. And then umpteen years later, I, you know, come to the realization I've got the same predisposition. And several rehab attempts, and finally able to get sober 18 years ago. But it was very difficult to do. And there's still isms about my dad that manifest in me, but I'm trying very hard to take a different road and break the chain. So this song came about that for me specific, but really it never mentions that anywhere in the song. It just talks about trying to break the chain. So it's really a song about any sort of dysfunctional behavioral patterns we have from our family of origin that we're trying to break and, you know, start new, is what the song's about. I had no idea that stuff was still causing quite a lot of disturbance below the surface in me. And it wasn't until we wrote this song that I was sort of shocked that this story came out the way it did.
You don't write about that kind of stuff really often.
No.
And I'm curious, why do you think the sound of that guitar, why do you think it came out? Why was there something about the way that guitar sounded, those melodies that you were playing, that triggered this?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's, I love the mystery of it.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the songs I've written are from the music out, because the music is trying to tell me the story. It's not. I remember saying to someone one time that's mostly how I write, is from the music out. The music comes, the melody comes, and then the lyrics come very, very last. And I had someone say, "Oh, so you don't really have anything to say?" And I went, "Well, I do, but apparently it comes from here first, because this is the same story that the lyrics are going to speak to. They're they come from each other.
Yeah.
It's not two separate things being created and shoved together. They're born of each other. And so, you know,
too late. Is it too late for me to listen? For me to change? So far, I'm doing all right. I got a feeling maybe it's my time to shine.
And so on, is all coming from the sound of that guitar that's already got this story.
Yeah. You did say that the lyrics came pretty quickly. Mm. What was Mark doing through all of this? Was he still there when you wrote the
whole thing?
He was
building the track really quickly.
Yeah.
And he sort of started, he took these two guitar parts and then put them on loop, because they underpin the entire song. They never change. These two parts stay the entire time. Then he started adding some atmospheric keyboards, some other sort of sonic textures, and he just started doing beautiful atmospheric things, which was probably helping me stay in the atmosphere of what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
And I got my legal pad and went and sat on his couch, and I'm sort of writing away, and he's over there working on his Pro Tools rig. And I get to the second verse of the song, which is a bit more specific about my dad, and I just start weeping, just straight out crying, you know, in front of this complete stranger. I'm sitting on the couch just crying, and he looks over at me and he goes, must be true. And then went right back to work on the thing, like didn't acknowledge it past that. And it was such a perfect reaction, because if he'd said, his tissues nonsense,
right.
It was just right. He knew what to do. You know, you just let it, don't interrupt it. Whatever's going on, just let it come, whatever it is. Don't get in the way of it. And so it was written very fast. And again, that doesn't typically happen for me with a song.
It's the last track on High.
Mm.
Why did you want to choose this song as the closer for the album, the last thing that people hear on it?
When I wrote it, I immediately felt like I want to end the album with this. Whatever the next album is, I want to end it with this. I don't know what songs are going to be with this. I don't know what sort of album I'm making, but I know this has to be the last song. Because it's a bit of a prayer as well. It's not a heavy song because it's got hope threaded through it. It's maybe it's my time to change and to shine. Like I can, maybe why not? You know, my dad couldn't do it. His dad couldn't do it. Maybe I can do it. Why not? Why not me? So there's a lot of hope in the song that you don't have to keep carrying around all this stuff, all this toxicity and damage, all the trauma and the damage. If there's a chance to break the chain of any of it, then what an amazing opportunity to take. And I'll only do so much with that, and hopefully my kids will continue that work, you know, and then their kids and so on, because it's never finished.
Yeah. Hear you sing in the song at the beginning asking, is it too late? And you get to a place where it's never too late.
It's never too late.
Yeah.
No, it's never too late. So it doesn't matter how old you are.
This is Keith Urban. It's Break the Chain on World Cafe.
Too late. Is it too late for me to listen? For me to change? So far, I'm doing all right. I've got a feeling, or maybe it's my time to shine, to come alive, to make it right. Right with my past, the ones I hurt and left behind. It's not too late for me to change. No, no. Out here, I've been out here on my own now for way too long, fighting
never safe and never sure. What made him so mad at the world? Mad at me? I was just a kid. I won't do the same. And it's not too late.
It's not too late.
It's never too late.
It's never too late
to break the chain.
Cafe, Keith Urban, Break the Chain from his latest album, High. You're listening to World Cafe's Backtracking, where we give an artist a bunch of prompts. They choose from those prompts, and they match them up to songs from their discography. That song was Keith's answer to the song that surprised him. And again, Keith has a new album called High. He's been my guest today. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. Thanks for having me in your studio.
Thank you.
For playing instruments and just for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks, Keith.
Thanks, Raina. Thank you.
I'm Raina Duras, back in a moment with more World Cafe. Before the break, here on World Cafe, you heard a new Backtracking with Keith Urban. You can watch that interview if you like, recorded in his brand new studio in Nashville. We went down to visit. He's surrounded by his guitars, and he gets out the ganjo. You can see it yourself. Just go to worldcafe.org or to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/worldcafe and subscribe. Keith Urban, born in New Zealand, moved to Australia when he was 2. So, more music from Australia, starting with Men at Work. This is Down Under on World Cafe.
Traveling in a freighter combi on a hippie trailhead full of zombies. I met a strange lady, she made me nervous. She took me in and gave me breakfast. And she said, do you come from a land down under? Where women go and men wonder. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. I said, do you speak my language? He just smiled and gave me a Vegemite sandwich. And he said, I come from a land down under. Peter's law and mention her. Can't you hear the thunder? You better run, you better take cover. Yeah.
listening to 830 AM KSDP in Sandpoint, Alaska.
Ha 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 ha!